Good morning, all. This is the business meeting of the Judicial Council of California for April 24, 2012. The meeting is now in session. The council will hear public comment and internal committee reports and approve the consent calendar this morning before a short lunch break. We'll then reconvene for our discussion agenda. As you know, and as is posted, it includes further cost reduction recommendations from the Court Facilities Working Group, an audit for the Superior Court of Mono County, revisions to the Judicial Branch Contracting Manual, a funding request from the Superior Court of El Dorado related to that court's remodeled juvenile facility. And finally, Judge Herman will provide an update on branch technology issues related to our last meeting on CCMS. But first, as you know, always some housekeeping matters. I remind council members that our meetings are audio cast live with real-time captioning on the California Courts website, and portions of these meetings are also routinely videotaped for later broadcast on CCN California Courts News. We've had several online visitors and even greater numbers for the archived audio cast and video reports. So for their benefit, please speak into your microphone, address each other by name when possible, so that audio cast listeners and real-time captioning readers can follow our discussion. We have, I understand, 5 requests for public comment at this meeting, including several judicial officers from whom we will hear one of them first. One of our judicial colleagues has asked to speak on Item D, the Court Facilities Working Group recommendations for reducing costs, and we will invite him to the podium at that point in the meeting when we discuss Agenda Item D. And we also have members of the public, I understand, interested to speak on that item, and we will call them at that time also. We further have, as you know, written comments that are included in Judicial Council members' materials. Those written comments are posted on the Judicial Meetings page on the California Courts website. There's also a handout of the three persons who did submit written comments, name and title, affiliation, and topic. So now I'd like to call on Presiding Judge David Warner, Superior Court of San Joaquin County. Welcome, Judge Warner.
Thank you. Chief Justice and members of the council, I appreciate the opportunity to address you this morning in a somewhat unusual method during public comments. I'm Dave Warner. I'm the presiding judge of San Joaquin County, which has, you know, the unfortunate distinction of being the most under-resourced court in the state. During the entire time that the trial court funding has been provided by the state through the Judicial Council allocation process, San Joaquin County has been underfunded. The RAS model, which was developed by the council, allowed us to put some numbers to that and quantify where we were at. This fiscal year, we were 37% under-resourced until we received emergency funds provided by the council back in December 2011. I need to acknowledge those emergency funds as they have allowed us to keep our doors open, but more importantly, they've allowed us to keep all case types up and running. We also, which we were likely to not be able to do, are doing small claims cases. While they're not being done in a timely fashion, at least they're making their way to court. As we try to provide a justice system in our county, we struggle to cut expenses to stay within our budget while still providing all the case types that are called for in our system. It's becoming increasingly clear, however, that we're fighting that battle with one hand tied behind our back, as we're not addressing the budget allocation issue as is done through the Judicial Council. We have the ability to control the expense side of our budget, but we have little control over the revenue, more specifically the budget allocation. Relative to our expenses, we continue to look for areas to cut that will not affect our core functions, and we look for ways to be more efficient. Regarding revenues that are outside the budget allocation process, we look for opportunities to enhance those fines and fees that provide some direct increases in the revenue to our county. We've been working with the court assessment review team to find ways to improve our efficiency and operations. That process will be completed soon, and we look forward to receiving the report. It's clear to me, however, that we will not be able to dig ourselves out of our financial hole simply by being more efficient or raising fees. We need to have a significant change in the revenue side of our budget to have the appropriate impact. While you may say that this is true for all trial courts, we're not all the same. It is important to understand that if the state eliminated the $653 million of cuts to the judicial branch, if the court's budget were made whole, San Joaquin County would still be underfunded. And that applies to a few other courts as well. After years of languishing in a continual state of underfundedness, if I can use that term, the council put forth a plan to address the issue. For a period of three fiscal years, beginning in the year 2005-2006, the council took a portion of SAL funding and directed it to the under-resourced courts, including San Joaquin County. That funding, known as workload, growth, and equity, was added to our baseline budget. Consequently, we finally started to dig out of that financial funding hole. Unfortunately, even in those good economic years, some of those funds so desperately needed in the under-resourced courts were taken. The legislature was lobbied, and in the second year of that process, directed that the workload, growth, and equity fund be cut in half. We estimate that this move cost San Joaquin County about $1 million, and it's cost us $1 million every year since, as it was not added to our baseline budget. We need your assistance to address this budget allocation issue. What is the plan to fix the structural inequity that exists in funding between trial courts? I'm here to request that the council address the issue and create a plan. When we were here seeking emergency funds in December, we were asked a question by this council, what's your plan? And I think that that was an appropriate question to ask. So I'm now here asking you, what's your plan? I've been told that this problem cannot be addressed during our unprecedented financial downturn. Why not? If not now, when? It certainly hasn't been adequately addressed, even in the best of financial times. It's unfair that our court receives revenues that are millions and millions of dollars less to handle the same caseload or the same proportionate caseload as other courts. I understand that there may be factors to be considered from county to county, but it does not justify these vastly different budget allocations. I realize that many courts are now under-resourced, but for many this is a new problem. It's not a new problem for San Joaquin County. We've been under-resourced every year I've been on the bench, over 14 years. When we sought emergency funding, we were asked whether or not we would be back next year for more emergency funding. The answer is yes, until that structural allocation problem is fixed. It's important to point out that if legislation passes that provides for historical funding to be maintained by the trial courts, the underfunding of San Joaquin County will be locked into place. We frequently hear concerns from others in the court system that what is happening to our county is unfair and that something needs to be done. But year after year, we end up in the same position on the bottom. I do understand that you have many difficult issues to address on behalf of the entire branch. Having said that, I want to stress how important it is that you address this issue. And I urge you to put a plan in place that will address the inequitable funding allocations between the trial courts. And again, I appreciate the opportunity to be here to address you today. Thank you.
Thank you, Presiding Judge Warner. Yes.
The RAS model allocation is coming back to the council when, Jody?
I believe it'll be June or July, later this summer.
Thank you, Judge So. And while there are other speakers, as you can see on the public comment, those other speakers, I understand, including one of our colleagues, has asked to reserve their time until that matter is taken up on the agenda, and that's item D. So on our agenda, the next matter of order is the approval of minutes, and we're looking at minutes from two of our meetings and the other of March 27. Miriam.
Yes, actually, the March 27th meeting, I was present, but by phone, so that should be modified.
Thank you. We'll take that correction. I appreciate that. Any other corrections to the minutes? And if not, may I hear a motion?
To approve. Second.
Okay. Judge Stowe moved approval, second by Judge Moss, and a second somewhere on the left side, Miriam Krinsky. All in favor of approving the minutes of February 28th and March 27th?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries. Next comes the reporting of activities since our last meeting. It starts with the Chief Justice's report. First, I want to begin by thanking Council once again for revising their busy schedules to accommodate our special session on March 27, focusing on CCMS. This full-day meeting provided the opportunity to thoroughly review and discuss options for the statewide court case management system in the context of our reduced resources. Your unanimous decision to halt deployment and implementation of CCMS-4, I know, was difficult for all, and it was also bold. Our action has, as you've read, provoked commentary on all sides of the issue, not only in California, but nationally. Our responsibilities to improve efficiency in the courts and public safety statewide are still very much with us, and perhaps are an even more urgent priority for us now. So we are thankful for the work of Judge Herman and Justice Breniers and the CCMS internal committee members as they evaluate the alternatives to statewide deployment of CCMS V4. I understand the committee will come back to the council at future meetings with new strategies, new technologies, and a new governance structure, as well as near-term solutions to improve services to litigants, attorneys, justice partners, and the public. And I know that that process is collaborative with input from the courts. I also want to acknowledge two departures from the council, one immediate, that is Judge Sharon Waters, and, of course, the other upcoming, that is Fritz Ulrich. Several weeks ago, I did receive a very kind letter of from Sharon Waters, Judge Waters, informing me of her decision to leave the council for personal reasons. As all of us know, Judge Waters has a long history of service to the council, to the courts, and she's made many significant contributions to the administration of justice. She most recently served as a member of the Executive and Planning Committee. We will miss her and her good humor. Our advisory member, Supreme Court Clerk Fritz Ulrich, announced his retirement last month. Fritz's official retirement date is June 29, so he will be present at our next meeting, and we will acknowledge his service on the council, as well as his tremendous 47-year career in the state justice system. For now, though, please join me in congratulating Fritz on his announcement. Now, two of my near-term priorities over the last year have been a comprehensive review of the organization and work of the Administrative Office of the Courts and the search for a new Administrative Director of the Courts. I appointed two committees from Judicial Council and also from the judges at large to assist me in both of these efforts. The Strategic Evaluation Committee, I understand, completed much of its extensive fact collecting and interviews and surveys and research in January and is now preparing its final report and recommendations. We expect those to be submitted to Executive and Planning over the next possibly 4 to 6 weeks. I will ask Justice Miller to provide a brief update on his conversations with the co-chairs of the SEC, Assistant Presiding Judge Charles Walkup of the Superior Court of Placer County and Presiding Judge Brian McCabe of the Superior Court of Merced County. Also, the search committee has been very active. I will ask Justice Hull to provide an update on the status of the search. I once again want to thank Jody Patel for stepping up to serve as interim administrative director. This is a very difficult and challenging time for the AOC, as it is for the entire branch. The staff remains on mandatory monthly furloughs, a general salary freeze in effect now for 3 years. A staff has been reduced through 2 rounds of voluntary separation agreements, and I know layoffs are pending. Join me in thanking Jody and Interim Deputy Administrative Director Kurt Soderlund for their commitment and willingness to make some very tough decisions and to step up this last year. Thank you. And we will hear more about what's happening in the AOC from Jody when she presents her report. Since our February meeting, like many of you, I've had a full schedule of meetings with court leaders and legislators, as well as many appearances at public forums and before various bar organizations, and I'm always gratified to see so many Judicial Council members present at those organizations and in those meetings. I'll mention just a few. On March 19, I gave my first State of the Judiciary address to a joint session of the legislature. This is an opportunity to share our priorities and our achievements with the legislature, let them know a little bit about the history of the branch that's so important as we make decisions in the future, and also, once again, to make the case for adequate funding. I want to thank my colleagues on the Supreme Court, on the Council, and in the courts for attending that session. Your presence there for my inaugural judiciary address and your conversations with legislative members before and after the State of the Judiciary were welcome. Earlier in the month, I had the pleasure of joining the Chief Justices of New York, Massachusetts, Texas, Indiana, and other states for the 15th annual Lehman Colloquium at Yale Law School. The topic of the lectures was nationally accessing justice, rationing law. I spoke at the opening session on the challenges of ensuring court services with reduced resources, and also California's Sergeant Shriver Civil Counsel Act, our pilot project, otherwise known as the Civil Gideon, which garnered a lot of interest from other states about what California is doing. The only other state doing something similar is New York. 2 weeks later, I was in New York at the invitation of former Chief Judge Judith Kaye for an important conference called the National Leadership on School Justice Partnerships, Keeping Kids in School and Out of Court. I thank Miriam Krinsky for all of your assistance in this information gathering and bringing me up to speed on the issues facing education and children and suspension and expulsion in California. The California delegation included Justice Dick Huffman, Judge Stacey Boulware-Urey of the Superior Court of Sacramento County, Judge Richard Blake of the Hoopa Valley Tribal Court, and Jeannie Oropeza of the Department of Education, among others. The ideas and information shared at the conference were extremely relevant, very interesting and surprising in many ways, and I think it will help shape some of our efforts as we move forward looking at juvenile justice and civics education. I also had the opportunity to address the annual conference of California Appellate Defense Council at their meeting in Berkeley. I welcome judges participating in the 2012 Supervising Judges Institute here in the Conference Center. In early April, I traveled to Bakersfield to address the Kern County Bar Association and members of the bar in neighboring counties, and that's Edie Mathai's old stomping ground. It was wonderful to be there. I left Bakersfield to drive to Los Angeles, where I attended the Friends of the Los Angeles County Law Library Gala and received that organization's Beacon of Justice Award. Legislative hearings last week on the effect of budget cuts on the public's access to justice were preceded by a press conference on the steps of the Capitol. Many of you were there. I thank you for being there. As you know, the event was organized by our counsel colleague and chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee, Senator Noreen Evans. I, along with judicial council members, joined Senator Evans, Senator Lonnie Hancock, California Bar President John Streeter, attorneys Ted Olson and David Boies, and others in making the case for adequate funding for the courts. Following the hearing, I spoke briefly at a reception sponsored by the Sacramento Bar Association. I was invited to participate in the Distinguished Speaker Series at the RAND Corporation last week in Santa Monica, and I had the opportunity to speak with researchers there about their work on justice-related issues in California and around the country, including their interest and their devotion of a researcher to criminal alignment in realignment in California. I look forward to finding any way we can collaborate with them on making that a more efficient and useful and streamlined system for the courts and for the public. Finally, last Thursday, Justice Miller and I attended the Desert Bar Luncheon in Palm Desert, where I delivered remarks and took questions from the attorneys. That was very pleasant. A Law Day event in the Capitol is coming, so I'd like to extend an invitation to anyone who is able to join me for Law Day 2012 at Constitution Wall in Sacramento on May 8th. This is the first of what I hope will be an annual official commemoration of Law Day by branch leaders in California. The theme for Law Day this year is No Courts, No Justice, No Freedom, a recognition by the American Bar Association of the funding crisis for courts nationally in nearly every state. And at that event, I will present the Chief Justice's Award for Exemplary Service and Leadership to the Open Courts Coalition for its outstanding service to the judicial branch during the funding crisis. Details about the events are on the California Court website. So that brings me up to yesterday, where we had the PJ meeting. And finally, that involved PJ's meeting with different judges. And I want to say yesterday, Justice Miller, Justice Hull, Judge Bob Moss, and I joined Judge Rosenberg, chair of the Trial Court Presiding Judges Advisory Committee, and several other presiding judges for a meeting We discussed some of the issues that came up, have come up throughout the year. I also was happy that the president of the State Bar Association and a member of this council, Judge David Rubin, was also present. Alliance members also attended. It wasn't a committee meeting, but it was meant to be a more informal conversation amongst judges and council leaders, and it was moderated by Justice Tony Klein. And as you know, I and many of you have many, many meetings with court leaders each week on many topics. But this session was the subject of several news reports or commentaries. I normally wouldn't report on them, but I will say that yesterday's session was positive, it was productive, and I think we have many court leaders who care deeply about the future of the courts, and we have much to talk about in the future with them, and it will be very exciting. I appreciate that Presiding Judge Lori Earle and Judge Rosenberg invited me and the Judicial Council members to come to that meeting to listen to the concerns. And I think that we look forward to more discussions with the presiding judges on topics of interest of governance to all of us. That concludes the Chief Justice's report, and I will turn it over to Jody Patel for the Administrative Director's report.
Thank you, Chief. Good morning.
Good morning.
My written report, which you have in front of you, provides an update since the February Judicial Council meeting on the various activities that the AOC has been engaged in to further the council's goals and priorities for the judicial branch. But I want to highlight just a couple of issues. Following last Monday's joint Senate committee hearing on the impact of budget reductions on access to justice, the Senate Budget and Fiscal Review Subcommittee, Sub 5, convened for a hearing last Thursday on the judicial branch budget. Kurt Soderlin and Zlatko Theodorovich testified at this hearing. Zlatko addressed the council's budget proposal that in part seeks a restoration of the $100 million general fund reduction to the branch. The LAO presented a summary of its recommendations, which I believe all of the council members have seen, to which Kurt responded, including LAO's recommendation that the legislature reject the governor's proposed budget bill language that would permit the council to allocate budget reductions and allow the legislature to establish its own funding priorities for the judicial branch, as well as options for addressing ongoing budget reductions, including trial court fund balances. The subcommittee held open the items on the judicial branch budget as the funding plan gets further developed. It did take an action on requesting a report prior to the May revise report detailing operational efficiencies system-wide or court-specific implemented by the branch. We already have some of this information, which OGA is taking the lead on, working with the presiding judges and court executive officers, which we've been using in our advocacy efforts, and we will be working with court leadership to refine and add detail for that report. The subcommittee also asked for the Judicial Council to report back on existing differentials in the funding levels of trial courts and for a report on the termination of the CCMS project. Directly related to the issues of operational efficiencies, I also want to share with you a little bit about the restructuring efforts underway here at the AOC. During the past 60 days, we've accelerated our restructuring efforts in order to ensure that we can meet some of the budget reductions that AOC will be facing for the 12-13 fiscal years. And our focus is on four key but overlapping areas as an executive team that we've been working on. First is managing the budget reductions for the upcoming fiscal year. Secondly, confirming core priorities and activities for the AOC in an environment of reduced resources. Third is identifying programs and services that should and could be realigned or eliminated. And lastly, identifying associated employee positions that will need to be realigned or eliminated through layoffs. In terms of addressing budget reductions, we are in the middle of implementing, and the Chief mentioned this, a second round of our voluntary separation incentive program. The first cycle implemented in the last quarter of 2011 allowed us to reduce our workforce by 26 regular employees. We will have our final numbers on the second round of our VSIP program by the end of May, and I'll be able to report to the council on the actual number of reduced employees at the June meeting. As the chief mentioned, we will also have layoffs. Right now, we are anticipating doing this in phases based on funds we will need available as we do leave payouts in a phase kind of an approach. Layoffs have always been a last resort for the AOC, as it is just for the trial courts and other judicial branch entities. But now it appears that layoffs will be a necessity for the AOC. We have shared this information with staff about 2 weeks ago, and like those courts that have already had or will have layoffs, we understand the hard reality for colleagues who will lose their livelihoods, as well as the detrimental impact that a reduced workforce will have on AOC programs and services. As we work through this realignment process, programs and service priorities and any associated reductions, they will be discussed with the Chief Justice as well as with you, the counsel. In addition, we will seek input from trial and appellate court leaders on issues where courts will be most directly affected. We are conscious that you will receive recommendations from the Strategic Evaluation Committee sometime in the near future, as the Chief indicated, but the AOC does need to move forward with its own internal process so that the agency can be best positioned to meet its anticipated budget reductions come July 1. Finally, during these challenging times for our courts and the AOC, really underscores the valuable contributions of the dedicated and experienced professionals who serve the judicial branch of government. This morning, I want to, in partnership with the chief, recognize an AOC professional who at the end of this week is retiring from service to the branch, the Judicial Council, the AOC, and the people of California after 37 years. Michael Fisher, senior attorney with our Office of General Counsel, is the AOC's longest-serving employee since 1975. Michael has served 5 chief justices, all 4 administrative directors, and 3 general counsels. He has made important contributions in the evolution of the judicial branch and the AOC. For many years, he has served as staff to the Family and Juvenile Law Advisory Committee and been lead staff to the Family Law Subcommittee, working on significant statewide issues such as domestic violence prevention and the duties of children's counsel in family law matters. He's helped draft key legislation and rules on trial court funding and court facilities. He's also contributed to a host of other complex legal issues of importance to the branch, such as the consolidation and reorganization of California's former justice and municipal courts, judicial branch governance, branch fiscal management, statewide sentencing practices, judicial benefits, and public access to court budget and administrative decision making. I'm told that a review of our record shows that Michael has authored or co-authored roughly 65 reports to the Judicial Council on these and many other issues. Michael, on behalf of your AOC colleagues, we want to thank you for your service to the AOC and the judicial branch and the citizens of California. We will miss you very much, but we wish you the very, very best in your retirement. And before I invite Michael to receive a resolution from the Chief Justice recognizing his significant service and contributions, Chief, I believe you wanted to make a few comments.
Thank you. I do. It's hard to say what a great loss it is to the administration of justice, given your wealth of experience and service to so many chiefs and administrative directors. You really are a time capsule in many respects of the history and evolution. And I hope that before you go, you come by to see me personally so we can have an exit interview and I can learn what I can in the capsule of the 37 years you've served. I know that I am familiar with your reports, not only as chief, but as a judicial council member. And when I would read matters of interest relating to council action when I was an appellate court justice, your name on the byline and the author of these reports, Michael Fisher, I think is known to many and all of us. It is a great loss. I wish you much luck and pleasure in your next chapter. It can never be as enjoyable as judicial council has been since 1975, however. But you always have a place and a friend in all of us here. I ask you to please step up so that you may receive a small token of our gratitude.
Thank you. Thank you, Chief, and thank you, members of the council. It has been my great honor to have served this body for nearly 37 years. As you know, that's the role of the AOC. I'm proud to be part of your staff, and I know we do our job well. I'd also like to acknowledge Mary Roberts, probably the best boss anyone has ever had. When I came to the AOC, there were fewer than 35 people employed here. As the council's responsibilities have grown astronomically, the AOC has also grown, usually at a slower rate, to help carry out those responsibilities. As we now face significant cuts branch-wide and re-examination as to what the council and the AOC should be doing going forward, I'm sure that the council will continue to make the difficult and correct judgments in this regard. I am lucky to have worked at the AOC. I passionately believe in the importance of the justice system. The AOC, as your staff, helps you to improve the quality of justice provided to our ultimate clients, the people of California. During my tenure at the AOC, I have often appeared before the council and am one of the relatively few number of AOC staff who are known to you. For every one of me, there are many more individuals at the AOC that support our work for you. These individuals are as important, if not more so, than those of us you know. So while you honor me with recognition today, I can only accept this on behalf of all members of the AOC, for it would not have happened without them. Thank you.
Please come forward so we may present you with the resolution. Thank you. Next, we'll hear a report from PCLC, Justice Baxter.
Thank you, Chief. The Policy Committee met twice since the last Judicial Council meeting, taking positions on behalf of the Judicial Council on 11 separate pieces of legislation. On March 15th, the Policy Committee acted to oppose Assembly Bill 1709 relating to jury trials in juvenile delinquency matters, and also opposed AB 1444, AB 2163, and Senate Bill 1214, all dealing with expedited judicial review in CEQA cases. The Policy Committee also approved circulation for public comment of a legislative proposal from the Criminal Law Advisory Committee regarding uniform procedures governing the various forms of supervision resulting from criminal justice realignment. On April 12, the Policy Committee acted to support AB 1337 relating to service of notice in a parentage proceeding where a parent is deceased, and also Assembly Bill 2365, which expressly permits the court to consider a parent's continual or habitual use of prescription drugs in custody determinations. The Policy Committee also acted to support Senate Bill 1048, dealing with the authority of juvenile courts to join a governmental agency to an action and oppose SB 1124 concerning reimbursement of incarceration costs by defendant. Senate Bill 1206 relating to child abduction and imposing obligations on the court to secure passports in large numbers of cases and take actions best left to parents and other entities. The policy committee also took an opposed position on AB 2501, requiring the relocation of the Supreme Court, the AOC, and other state entities under the direction of a constitutional officer to the Sacramento metropolitan area. At that meeting, the committee took a multi-part position on AB 2076 relating to official court reporter fees and how they are assessed and distributed. And finally, a legislative proposal from the Criminal Law Advisory Committee regarding intercounty probation transfers was approved for circulation. Also, as mentioned by the Chief Justice, the Chief Justice delivered her first State of the Judiciary address to a joint session of the legislature. The Chief's address was immediately followed by a meet and greet with legislators and guests, and in addition, the Bench Bar Coalition's Day in Sacramento occurred the same day. When bench and bar leaders met with legislators on issues of critical importance to the judicial branch, they met and discussed issues including budget and court construction funding. Finally, our two Judicial Council-sponsored proposals have been introduced, Assembly Bill 2683 and Senate Bill 1574, by the respective judiciary committees. These are technical bills dealing with electronic discovery and forms for claimants in decedents' estates. The Office of Governmental Affairs is also in the process of scheduling liaison meetings with the Chief Justice, and those meetings will take place with leaders of groups very important to the judicial branch. Early in May, the meetings will include meetings with the state bar leadership and also with the consumer attorneys. And as you were recently informed, this Thursday, the Policy Committee will be meeting to consider for Judicial Council's sponsorship proposals relating to operational efficiencies, cost savings, and new revenue to be part of our budget approach. And any of you are welcome. You're all welcome to be on that call, that conference call that will be taking place this Thursday. So I will keep you informed of the progress of these proposals, the council-sponsored legislation, and other bills of interest to the judicial branch. And that completes my report, Chief.
Thank you, Justice Baxter. Any questions about the PCLC report? Thank you. Next, we'll hear from Justice Miller, E&P.
Thank you, Chief. Since February 28th, the committee has met six times, either by telephone or email. In the course of those meetings, the committee set the agendas for the special council meeting on March 27th to make decisions on deployment of the California case management system, and also we discussed the agenda for today's April business meeting. At the current, E&P is beginning the process to evaluate the nominations for the Judicial Council, and we hope to have those reviewed and provided to the Chief Justice as soon as possible. And as the Chief Justice indicated, we are anxiously awaiting the report of the SEC committee. This committee was formed approximately a year ago to study and make recommendations about the AOC and its operations. When E&P receives that, we will review that and have that presented with our recommendations to the council at our June meeting. Also, the two co-chairs will make a report at the June meeting on their formal findings and recommendations. And again, we are expecting that at our June meeting. And then lastly, if I can take just a moment, Chief, as everyone knows, we formed liaisons with judicial council members who are judicial officers and have assigned them to individual courts, some multiple courts at different places throughout California. And we've had a number of our judicial council members visit their courts, and we'd like to see if they would be willing just to give us a short report. So if I could start with Judge Moss, and then Judge Yu, Judge O'Malley, and then Justice Ashman Gerst.
Thank you, Justice Miller. On April 13, I visited my liaison court, Inyo County. Inyo County has a population of 18,000 people. There are two principal courthouses, one in the city of Independence and one in the city of Bishop. I met with the two judges of that county, Judge Dean Stout and Judge Brian Lamb, also their CEO and assistant CEO. We first went to their Independence facility, which is a historic building built in 1929. As you might expect, the conditions there, in my estimation, are deplorable. The staff is, nobody has their own office. The staff is crammed into small, poorly ventilated offices. There is no perimeter security in the building. They have the machines there for perimeter security, but no one to man them. They have no elevator in the two-story building, which is okay to walk upstairs, but not when you're carrying all the paper files they have to carry around. One courtroom on the ground floor, the judge has to walk through a public hall to get into the courtroom because there's only one door to the courtroom. He has to walk past the in-custody defendants and up the aisle to his bench. The room has windows all the way around with glass that isn't even safety glass, so someone could throw a brick or something worse through any one of those windows. So security is a big problem. We traveled then to Bishop, where they do have a more modern facility. It's actually a building owned by the city, and the court leases one courtroom there. The judges have, they share space for a chambers. The CEO is principally there. She does not have her own office. She has to share that with somebody else. Again, the staff is crammed into very small spaces. Despite all these hardships, the people in Inyo, the judges and the staff, are extremely supportive of the council, very appreciative of the AOC and all the efforts the AOC has made to help them. They cannot afford a human resources department like a large court like mine has, or a general counsel that a large court like mine has. They rely on the AOC for these services, and they're very, very pleased with the service they get from the AOC. And Judges Stout and Lamb, I'm happy to report, are very appreciative. Obviously, the big issue for this court is facilities. They are in dire need of better facilities, and I encourage all council members who are liaisons to do what I did and travel to your court and see what's out there. Thank you.
Thank you. Judge Yu?
There's some themes from what Judge Moss said that will play out in what I report. I met with my three liaison courts. They're Monterey, San Benito, and Santa Cruz. I met with the PJs and the court execs, and where possible, also the APJs. We had good conversations about questions that they had for the council, and then also I heard about concerns from these courts. So the one theme is there are concerns about cuts at the AOC. The Office of General Counsel, the HR department here at the AOC have really been able to serve the smaller courts. The smaller courts do not have funds to provide those services for themselves, and it would actually just cost way more and be inefficient if they could not access those services through the AOC. Also, IT support. So these courts expressed concern about anticipated cuts at the AOC, and they're already experiencing some decrease in service. They've noticed some sort of lag time in responding, and that may be related to some vacancies and furloughs. Another program that was appreciated by these courts is the assigned judges program. I met with the full bench at San Benito, two judges, and they said without that assigned court judges program, they would have difficulty meeting the needs of the litigants who come into the courts.
Another program that was lauded was the regional offices. The regional offices have been a boon to the courts, smaller courts, and they feel that they've gotten a lot of individualized attention. And again, they've noticed some decrease in services recently. In talking, we realized that there are some really unique issues that smaller courts face, and that it would be useful possibly for council members who represent the interests of all the courts in the state to hear from them. So they would be willing to come and make a presentation at a non-business meeting to provide some information and some perspective from a smaller court's point of view. The courts, as Judge Mosk reported, are very concerned about the facilities. They, as previously you heard, have security issues and custody's being moved through public hallways, courtrooms that do not have bulletproof glass, and just litigants who are traveling great distances to have their matters heard. So there's really quite a concern about court facilities. In addition, there's some concern about courts spending their resources responding to legislative mandated reporting where the branch is suffering budget cuts. And I think we read last week in the e-news that it was either the legislative branch or executive branch are looking at reports to the legislature, and they're talking about reports about kangaroos and how many kangaroos are sold in Australia. So we're wondering if maybe courts themselves can work with the legislature and suspend some mandated reporting in this time when resources are so thin. One thing that came out of our meeting was that I'm in Santa Clara, so we're very close to Monterey, San Benito, and Santa Cruz, and we're looking at coordinating geographically and collaborating with each other, and we have a meeting set up in early May so that all our courts can get together and work on some common goals. I wanted to thank the AOC staff, which was extraordinarily responsive in helping me prepare with my meetings for my liaison courts. You know, Nancy Spiro, Jody, Kurt, Peter Allen were able to help me respond to questions that I received in advance or respond afterwards. In fact, I know many of these people actually called the court the day after I returned from the liaison meeting and responded to some of the court execs and the PJ's questions. And I'd never been to some of these courts as a judge. I'd been there as a lawyer, so I never got the inside view. And it was really very impressive to have the opportunity to meet with these court execs. They're dedicated, hardworking, well-informed people. They're responding to me by email after hours. They listen to these broadcasts of the meetings, and they are just really people who have put their whole career and all their energy into their jobs, and they're looking toward the future. They're really trying to save money, plan for their court's needs for the future, and be responsive. And also, I lastly wanted to report that I was present when the Santa Clara liaison, Judge O'Malley, came and met with our bench, and she did a great job. People on my bench were very impressed with her report, and I think she did the council proud. I received feedback from my liaison courts that they were very appreciative of having this liaison program, and to a person, they were really very appreciative of the chief and her openness and her support of the courts. So thank you for letting me participate.
Thank you, Judge Hugh. Judge O'Malley.
Thank you, Judge Hugh.
You're welcome, Judge O'Malley.
It was my absolute pleasure to meet with the Santa Clara Court. They have a monthly meeting where they invite all judges on the bench to attend, and I'm happy to say it was a very good turnout. I was the first matter on the agenda, and it gave me an opportunity to, again, I followed Judge Yu's lead with regard to emailing their presiding judge, Judge Loftus, beforehand to say, you know, are there specific issues or questions that your members would like me to be able to address once I get there so that we can really get down to business? And he did forward me four very pointed questions that were of concern to the court. So I had an opportunity to address those, and I hate to sound like a broken record, but it was facilities, number one. They have a courthouse project, 1407, that's in the making. Santa Clara has always been a very progressive court with regard to its programs for just court users, as well as court administration. So it's always been a leader, and I know that because my court has adopted many of the programs that Santa Clara Court has initiated, and it's done very well by my court. And so I was very happy to go meet with them and thank them personally for all the innovative initiatives and programs that they've started that my court and myself and my judges on my court have been able to take advantage of. But the courthouse project, they're consolidating into one courthouse, several different divisions, of which several of these divisions are in leased facilities, warehouses, store shops, regular buildings that are in no way or fashion designed to accommodate court business. Some of these, you know, handle in custodies, and, you know, it's like walking into, you know, a department store, basically, to handle your court business. And there really have been not very many modifications, but for to add places for people to sit in an audience and a makeshift bench for a court to be able to handle the business. So they are in desperate need of consolidating all these different leases that are spread throughout the county into a very well-planned and organized court facility downtown. And this would house juvenile and family, court admin, and other things so that court users would be able to, you know, go through their court day much more efficiently, as well as staff. So it's very much needed. So they were very concerned about funds being available for them to be able to get out of all these leases, which is a waste of efficiency and money, and also a safety issue. So they were concerned about that and asked several questions and discussed that. And they were on the list for Justice Hill's, you know, committee to kind of reassess, not reassess, but to look at reducing costs. And so they were willing to do that, but also concerned about that as well. They also asked several questions about the budget cuts, what the council is doing to address those and to assist them in meeting their cuts that are coming their way. And also they are concerned about, again, cuts to the AOC and how this is going to affect services that their courts use. So they're, you know, a very independent court, but, you know, I gather that they also use the services of the AOC. And so they were concerned about, of those, what would be available for them, given the cuts that the AOC is facing. They also received an update from me about all the different committees, Chief, that you have enacted with regard to looking at the way that we operate, the governance and so forth, with regard to the council, the SEC. Some of them were unfamiliar with the work of the SEC and knowing that that report was coming out in June, and so they were interested to hear that. Again, I hope to attend future monthly meetings that they have to keep them updated, to keep them informed, and to, again, answer any questions that they have. And it was a very productive and helpful meeting. It was my absolute pleasure to be able to do that, and I congratulate you for having the idea to be able to reach out in this type of a program, and I thank you for that.
Thank you. Justice Ashman-Gersh.
Thank you, Doug. I'm happy to report back on two of my visits, actually. I did a very informal visit up at Mono County. I just happened to be at Mammoth. little skiing. And I wandered in. I know Stan Eller, who is the current PJ, and I just wandered in to say hello and to see their new building. They have a brand-new state-of-the-art building now in Mammoth that they are just thrilled and delighted with. Previously, they were on the third floor of a strip mall and a shopping area above the Japanese restaurant. And now they have their own building with just outstanding security. Got a grand tour by from one of the bailiffs who was just thrilled with the way the lockups are, the video, the courtrooms. So they're really just delighted with that. I did not get up to the Bridgeport Court, which apparently is a completely different situation where it's totally insecure, and the bailiff was saying that he every time they have to go up to Bridgeport, it just, you know, really frightens him because security is so bad up there. There are two judges in Mono, and they travel back and forth between Bridgeport and Mammoth, taking turns doing the calendars. My visit most recently was to the Ventura Superior Court. And I met there with the PJ, Vince O'Neill, the APJ, Brian Beck, two prior PJs, their executive committee, Mike Planet, and several of their other staff people. I had emailed them in advance and said, do you have any issues that you would like me to cover? I didn't hear back from them. So when I opened the meeting, I said, you know, do you want to talk about the value of the AOC, the role of RuPro, the issue, there's a big issue floating around with the trial courts on reimbursement for dependency counsel. They want to talk about that, the issue of court reporters, technology. I mean, I really just opened it up. Their main concern focused about budget and budget restoration and how do they plan not knowing what's going to happen. And, you know, just how difficult it can be not knowing what your budget's going to be from year to year. They're troubled because they have to shut down their CME courthouse. They're going to be bringing in the two civil courts, two civil calendars from CME, which is going to be a huge inconvenience to the public. They also, as many courts have done, they've taken the court reporters out of civil, laying off their part-time reporters. Their civil judges are concerned that not having reporters available likely will result in delays of civil trials, which is an interesting perception. Lawyers not realizing what the situation is, trying to get court reporters, are they certified, those kinds of issues that they're going to have to deal with in the very near future. They were also disappointed, of course, that CCMS was terminated. They were... Mike Planet, who is their exec, has been very much in the forefront of technology. However, they're totally integrated with CGIS, and they're not going to be looking for a case management system. That court, it's a medium-sized court. It's 26 current judges, very supportive of the AOC and very supportive of the work currently being done, particularly by Jody and her staff. Ventura, like the other courts, relies on and gets very good service from the AOC. They're concerned that reductions are going to result in decreased service. They point out that what the service they get from litigation management, from OGC. They use a tech center for technology. They get value from OGA. They rely on CEDR for training. They couldn't say enough about the training programs that CEDR puts on since because of their size, they're not capable of putting on the same kind of programs themselves. They pointed out that the AOC gives them support with their self-help center, with their pro tem training, and they noted that Ventura works collaboratively with the AOC, and by the same token, their judges all give back to the AOC. When you look at the list which was provided to me by staff, all of their judges and their staff people, all the various committees and advisory committees and council that they have been involved in. So it's been very, very much a two-way street with Ventura. I thought it was a great meeting. I told them I would come back in the fall and encourage them to feel free to contact me at any time. I just agree with everybody else, Doug, that this is a really important and worthwhile project, and I really appreciated the opportunity to participate in it.
Well, I want to thank each of you for your visits, and especially, though, for your report back to myself and to Jody and to Nancy Spiro about what, in essence, it was that you found in your visit, but especially the suggestions that you had about concerns or ideas of ways that we can better interact with the trial courts. That's really the main benefit of this program, is to make sure that we hear and we listen, and then we bring that back to Jody to make sure it's effectuated. So I did want to indicate that I have an upcoming visit to one of my courts, San Diego, on May 7th. I'm also assigned to Los Angeles, and I've been meeting and talking regularly with Presiding Judge Lee Edmond and Assistant Presiding Judge David Wesley. I appreciate both of them keeping me informed about the unfortunate cuts that they've had to make in their court and letting me be involved in talking to them about that process. And then I just wanted to lastly say that I encourage all of you to please make your visits. If you need assistance in arranging for them or setting them up or anything like that, you can contact myself or Jody or Nancy Spiro, and they will make sure that we have those arrangements set. And also any materials that you need, please contact Nancy Spiro and with her team and with Kurt Child and anyone else. They will put those together for you. And then, you know, as I want to do and to talk too long, I did want to say one last thing, and that, again, is to echo what the chief indicated with regards to the meeting that we had yesterday with the PJs, and then also to report back that it was a very good meeting, a very effective meeting. There were some great ideas and suggestions and concerns that were raised, and that the chief has indicated as a chair of E&P that I can move ahead with talking to the presiding judges through Judge David Rosenberg as chair of the presiding judges committee, and that we have already done that this morning, and we'll be talking about a process. And I've also been communicating with presiding judge Lori Earle about what we do and how we move forward. So that's our report, and thank you, Chief.
Thank you. Any questions about the E&P report? It was very illuminating. Thank you. Justice Hull for Rupro.
Thank you, Chief. Good morning. Members of the Council, with your permission, I'd like to give you the report of the Rules and Projects Committee first, and then I'll make a few comments to bring you up to date on our search for a new director for the Administrative Office. The Rules and Projects Committee has met three times since the February 28th Judicial Council meeting. On March the 15th, RuPro met by telephone to review three proposals that had circulated for public comment during the winter rules cycle. RuPro recommends approval of these proposals, which are items A1, A2, and A4 on today's consent agenda. Item A1 is a rule proposal to implement recently enacted legislation establishing expedited review of certain CEQA cases in the Court of Appeal. Although RuPro recommended this item be on the consent agenda, members of RuPro thought it was important to note several things about this particular item. First of all, the underlying legislation, AB 900, entitled, quote, the Jobs and Economic Improvement Through Environmental Leadership Act of 2011, is not uncontroversial. It made significant changes in the procedures for review of the cases covered under the Act, including moving initial review from the Superior Court to the Court of Appeal, thereby eliminating the right to appeal in these cases. Secondly, this legislation was developed during the last week of 2011, of the 2011 legislative session, and it moved through the legislative process very, very quickly. The Judicial Council did not take a position on AB 900 because of the speed with which the bill moved through the legislature. The proposed rules to implement this legislation were initially drafted by a working group that included judicial officers, court staff, and attorneys with experience handling CEQA cases. This working group, the Appellate Advisory Committee, and RuPro all spent considerable time on this proposal, including, in particular, on determining whether the rule or its accompanying advisory committee comment should address the court's authority to summarily deny petitions filed under this act. Secondly, in response to a referral from the Council, RuPro also determined the appropriate advisory committee or task force to review and make recommendations concerning ethics standards for neutral arbitrators in contractual arbitration, an issue that we recall from recent Council meetings. RuPro referred the proposal to the Civil and Small Claims Advisory Committee with the recommendation that it create a working group that includes individuals with experience and expertise in the area of contractual arbitration, and the proviso that meetings be held in a manner as not to incur travel expenses. RuPro has also, since the last meeting, reviewed and approved changes to the invitation to comment form. In response to helpful recommendations from the Trial Court Presiding Judges Advisory Committee and the Court Executives Advisory Committee, RuPro decided to make the following changes. Number one, an executive summary that includes the origin of the proposal, so that courts and commentators will be able to get a quick overview of the proposal and whether it has been proposed in response to legislation or otherwise. And number two, a new section containing questions for courts, such as, will the proposal provide cost savings? What are the implementation requirements for courts? And how well would this proposal work in courts of different sizes? The answers to these questions will assist the advisory committees in providing the Judicial Council with more information about the costs and operational impacts of a proposal. On March the 28th, RuPro met by telephone to review two proposals, one of which circulated for public comment during the winter rules cycle. The other proposal makes miscellaneous technical changes to the family law rules. RuPro recommends approval of these proposals, which are items A3 and A5 on today's agenda. RuPro members met by video conference on April the 11th to consider 27 proposals to circulate for public comment in the spring 2012 rule cycle, all of which were approved for circulation. These proposals are posted for public comment through June 15th. The number of proposals, I think we should note, that RuPro approved to circulate for comment this year is less than half the number of proposals that circulated for public comment last year. In response to concerns expressed by courts and recommendations and the recommendations of the Trial Court Presiding Judges Advisory Committee and the Court Executives Advisory Committee, RuPro has made changes to the rulemaking process to lessen the burden on courts, both with review of proposals circulating for comment and with implementation. As we go forward this year, we will be reviewing many other rulemaking proposals or amendments to our rulemaking procedures to continue this effort. Some of the changes this year resulted in fewer rule proposals this cycle. RuPro would like to thank the Trial Court Presiding Judges and Court Executives Advisory Committee for their thoughtful recommendations and thank all advisory committees for implementing the changes that were requested. Following public circulation and further review by the advisory committees and RuPro, these proposals are expected to come before the Council at the October 2012 business meeting. Chief, regarding our efforts at identifying and hiring a new director, permanent director for the administrative office, as I think all of us recall, we began this effort last fall and retained a national search firm, Ralph Anderson and Associates, and the principal of that firm, Robert Berg, has been working very very strenuously towards identifying and making a national search, literally, for a new director and identifying qualified candidates to present to the committee which I chair, which in turn we will present to the council. The first effort step in that effort was to prepare a brochure, an application that was fully informative and accurate, and I'm happy to say that committee that the chief formed to look for a new director was very engaged in that effort, and I think we came forward along with Mr. Berg's help with a brochure and application form that met those needs. Because of in part the holidays and in part the press of events on all of our time, the brochure was not in a position where we could send it out until I believe it was early March. It did go out at that time. The close of the application period is April 27th, later this week. In a recent conversation I had with Mr. Berg, he has confirmed that he has, in fact, made a national search. He has talked to people all over the country. In particular, he would like to acknowledge the help that he has had in this search from Ms. Mary McQueen at the National Center for State Courts, but he also wants to note that he has had help from many people across the country. He tells me that he has identified a number of qualified candidates that he thinks the committee should consider, and we intend at this point to begin the interviews. The committee intends to begin the interviews of these identified persons in mid-May. We still have some optimism, beyond some optimism. I don't see any reason at this point why we will not be in a position to present to the council for its consideration a candidate or candidates for the position of permanent director at the June council meeting. If there are any questions, Chief, or comments, I'd be more than happy to hear them.
Thank you, Justice Hull. Any questions or comments? Seeing none, I would call on Judge Herman for the internal CCMS report.
Thank you, Chief. Internal CCMS, we have sort of been functioning under the working title of Internal Committee on Technology with the idea that we are going to at some point adjust the name given the Council's decision back on March 27th. Someone on the committee, and not to disclose any secrets, but someone on the committee, I believe the initials were IK, pointed out that Internal Committee on Technology, the acronym would be ICOT. And if we used a small I in front of the ICOT, Mary Roberts would probably be getting a letter from cease and desist letter from Apple Corporation. So we may do some rethinking on that. In any event, since the last council meeting on February 28th, our committee has met twice, once on March 19th, a joint meeting with executive and planning and preparation for the March 27th CCMS-focused special meeting, and then in person yesterday, April 23rd. And I will defer until our discussion this afternoon sort of the contents of that meeting and some of the items that were discussed and some of the presentations that were made. In addition, I'm just incredibly impressed that staff led by Jody Patel, Kurt Sutherland, Chris Patton, Mark Dissman, and Les Butler have hit the ground running in terms of refining the work plan, timelines, and costs for decommissioning CCMS and leveraging CCMS V4. It's been a great effort. Our vice chair, Justice Judith Ashman Gerst, Ira Kaufman, former vice chair, and myself have met weekly by teleconference with Justice Miller as chair of E&P and Justice Hall as chair of RuPro and a couple of other E&P members to be kept up to speed by staff on exactly where their effort is going forward. The chair, I have teleconferenced with SEAC to get their input in order to develop a go-forward vision and roadmap on their thoughts about where we go post-CCMS with technology. Alan Carlson, who's chair, provided us with a report that I'll also share the details of this afternoon. I also attended and made a presentation by teleconference to the trial court presiding judge's advisory committee. Again, we have input from their liaison, which I will discuss this afternoon. Last Friday, I met with the Court Information Technology Forum, a group of CIOs from throughout the state. It was a very instructional 2-hour meeting on the trial court. As they describe themselves, they are ground level, their thoughts on the future of court technology. And, again, I will defer further discussion of that until this afternoon. So that's what the committee has been up to since the council's direction on March 27th, and I look forward to a presentation where we'll go over what the work plan is go forward. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you, Judge Herman. Any questions or comments regarding the report? We look forward to more detail later this afternoon.
I would mention just one more reach out. One of my liaison courts is San Luis Obispo, and I've been in communication both with Judge LaBarbera, their presiding judge, as well as their CEO on the specific direction from the council regarding how we're going to work with San Luis Obispo go forward in terms of their case management needs.
I appreciate that update about what's happening with San Luis Obispo. This brings us on our agenda to the consent calendar. Having heard no request to move any of the items on our consent agenda to the discussion agenda, we approve these proposals and recommendations. As you know, the Executive and Planning Committee places items on the consent calendar in consideration of council meeting time. Placement on the consent agenda in no way reflects the significance of the item on the agenda. And prior to the meeting, any council member may request that an item be moved to the discussion agenda. And as I indicated earlier, that did not occur here. So consent agenda items A1 through A5 and B and C are approved.